Welcome to Ask the Chief Information Officer on Federal News Radio. Every week, Federal News Radio Executive Editor Jason Miller interviews CIOs of federal agencies about the latest directives, IT challenges, and successes. Now, your host, Jason Miller.
Welcome to the show. Today we're talking about legacy systems modernization. I moderated a panel earlier this month with three federal IT executives at an FCA Bethesda breakfast. My guests on the panel were Ray Coleman, the CIO of the Agriculture Department's Natural Resources Conservation Service, Ann Duncan, the CIO at the Environmental Protection Agency, and James Porter, an IT Portfolio Manager in the Office of the CIO in the Immigrations and Customs Enforcement Directorate at the Homeland Security Department. I start off the panel with a little context for our discussion, and then we hear from Ray Coleman and James Porter.
I'll go back to 2002, maybe earlier, but 2002 is when, if you remember Mark Forman, the former OMB Administrator for eGov and IT, he really started to make the phrase operations and maintenance, development, modernization, enhancement, really part of the community, the federal community's lexicon. Now, I'm sure, again, it probably existed before that, but when I went back and looked, that was the kind of the, when the articles that I looked at, those, that's when it really first came up. And while this focus over the last 13 or so years, it initially worked, you saw the pendulum swing away from O&M, more toward DME. What has happened? Well, over the last, you know, 4, 5, 6 years, unfortunately, the pendulum has swung back the other way. Sequestration, government shutdown, agencies felt the squeeze of budget pressures, and they ended up spending more on O&M. In fact, the annual survey from Grant Thornton and the Professional Services Council last year found that of the respondents, CIOs responded said they're spending about 75% of their budget on O&M and 25% on legacy systems. And the numbers show that out. I did a little bit of research. The IT dashboard tells me in 2014, agencies spent $58.8 billion on O&M, $17.7 billion on DME. 2015, the amount spent on O&M increased by $10 billion, and DME inched up a little bit as well to $18 billion, but not as much. And then in 2016, the estimate is that agencies will spend about $61.6 billion on O&M and $18.7 billion on DME. Pendulum is starting to move back. That is where federal CIO Tony Scott has been talking about. He says about 80%, about 80-20 split. He'd like to see that move closer to 70, most closer to 65. And OMB is still expected, and hopefully maybe someone will tell us on the panel today about this strategy, about how they're going to move the pendulum. When I spoke with Tony Scott back probably August timeframe, he basically told me the problem that agencies face many times is they have this use it or lose it. So it's easier to spend on O&M than on DME because if they don't spend it, they lose it. If they don't want to lose the money, so therefore it's easier to push it over there. Put the Band-Aid on, if you will. But at the same time, Scott has told me we're at this critical inflection point. You've heard him say that. Cloud, cyber, all these things are happening that's really forcing the transitions and making it easier. So a little bit of context in place. Let's turn to the panelists. Ray Coleman is the CIO at the Natural Resources Conservation Service at USDA. Ray,
yes.
Tell them something they don't know.
I'm very excited to be here today to talk to you about what we're doing and around legacy modernization. We have about 100 applications in production, and those stats that he read off are very real. I think one key thing that we have to realize that within an application perspective, there's a lot of DME going on in O&M. Right, which is also a number of reason why it's going up. So that use it or lose it is a very real stat. And that's one of the things that I'm identifying as a part of my efforts to legacy modernization for my 100 application pool is getting rid of that DME out of O&M. And I've made significant progress. I've actually reduced it 10% from last year to this year. And I'm excited to tell you about some other things that I'm doing as we go through the process of this panel today.
All right, so now you're going to make me ask the obligatory follow-up question.
Okay.
So you reduced by 10%. Give us a sense of how you did that.
Well, the first thing I did was define O&M, right? Everybody out there will tell you that OMB defines O&M really well. Well, I'm going to tell you it's very nebulous. I put very specific parameters in place that said this is O&M and told my project managers when you're doing O&M planning, this is O&M. Anything else is DME. Right, so we begin to start having some change management discussions. We begin to start having maintenance plans put together that's signed off by the business and by IT. Right, so as we begin to do that, we say, oh, hey, this is really DME as opposed to this definition right here. So as we begin to do that, we saw a 10% drop of dollars coming out of our O&A pool back into our DME pool. And that's where we're really trying to go. We're trying to increase our dollars in DME spending just because that's where we need to be at. decrease our dollars where we're actually spending our dollars in O&M, maintaining the system, but also creating kind of an innovation pool where we're allowed to do so that we can constantly have that spirit of innovation going on and modernizing our systems and keeping them up to date.
And last one, do you have a goal for 2016 in terms of continue that drop, or when do you hit a...
Right. So our goal right now is we're definitely trying to continue that drive. We realize we haven't gotten any of it, though. We haven't got to all of it yet. So one of the things that we're doing is focus on enterprise architecture. We've laid out our strategic plan, the agency's strategic plan goals, and we're mapping our IT systems to those strategic plan goals. And right now we're engaging the business, right? We're engaging our business elements and saying, hey, there's something between our IT systems and that strategic plan goal. It's called functional areas, functional components. We need to understand what those are. It could be a goal of conservation operations, but yet under there they may have something, soils management. It could be something else. Then our goal is to map those systems to those functional components so that we can begin to say, hey, you've got 10 systems doing the same thing. Should we have 10 systems doing the same thing, right? And then looking at our technology layer, we do have a really good as-is inventory, system inventory of our applications, and looking at that technology layer and saying, hey, applications that are 10, 15 years old, this technology is not even relevant anymore. Should we be changing these things out? So I think one of the things I want to leave you with for legacy modernization is that us as CIOs, and I think that's a big part of the problem how we got there, we're waiting on the business, or I should say the IT community, we're waiting on the business of these agencies or our components to come to us and say, it's time to modernize. What I'm suggesting is now it's time for the IT folks to use that information to engage the business and drive that conversation. And that's where we see some of our success at, because we are forcing them, when I say forcing, but we are having those conversations with them so that we can be a little bit more at the table with them and drive technology rather than have it dictated to us.
And I think that's a great point, because it's a common refrain I hear from so many CIOs when I talk to them about driving the business needs. We hear that a lot, but I think we're starting to see it more. Let's turn to James Porter, the IT Portfolio Manager in the Office of the CIO for Immigrations and Customs Enforcement at DHS.
I wanted to tell you a little bit about the portfolio that I manage. It's fairly diverse, and I have a number of programs that are in different areas of the modernization lifecycle. But if someone was to ask me, are you modernizing, there's not a single area where I'm not modernizing. The Cyber Sprint memo gave us a whole new set of call of actions to basically really button down and make sure all of our systems are PIV two-factor from the app level to even just logging into the system. So we're taking a lot of initiatives that I wouldn't call your traditional DME, so we're really bending the use of O&M to make sure that they fall within the confines of the programs that we defined. The programs that I have are the Detention Removal Operations and Modernization Program, which is an old program that's now in its third year of sustainment. That was primary mission was to retire an old IDMS mainframe. I don't know if you guys have all worked with IDMS before, but it's 30, 40 years old. So that was a successful program, and it's currently the case management detention system that ERO is using today. We also have the electronic health records, which is also in sustainment. That was rolled out it's been in sustainment for about 2 years. That replaced a lot of the manual processes we had out in the field at our clinics, 23 clinics or so, along a lot of paper processes. So moving from paper to centralized electronic health records has certainly enabled the organization to realize benefits and improvement of quality of care to the detainees. And lastly, we have the Criminal Alien Identification Initiative, which we are having a really hard time trying to get to full operating capability, but we're right there. We're within a couple of months, but don't laugh, but that's retiring an old FoxPro database, so the 90s live on. So maybe that's a little known fact. We're also in the early planning stages of immigration data modernization, and we're very early in the planning stages of that. We're really trying to get away from event-centric processing to more person-centric processing. So getting away from forms and the events to really having the history of any given person. Congress is very interested in knowing what happened to any individual at any given time through the entire immigration life cycle. So that's a big, challenging program that we're really in the process of rolling up our sleeves on. And it's actually modernizing a lot of the systems we just modernized. So we're kind of starting all over again, and that's where we are. I do want to comment on our operations and maintenance costs actually have not gone down. They've actually gone up as we've modernized our systems. we realized that the reason why we're modernizing is that we've been starving these systems and the people around them for so long that it's in our best interest to make sure we have proper training on an annual basis, that we have the people and the infrastructure in place. And so it's kind of a hard discussion to say we're going to modernize and then our tail end is going to be a higher cost. But in order to do that, from my perspective, it's to really make sure that we don't have to go through a large DME effort again, because they are very, very painful.
Without the least. All right, so I'm going to try to ask you to answer the question to get ahead of the line that's going to happen. You talked about the system that you're starting down the path, the immigration modernization system.
Right.
When you say early stages, where are you? Acquisition strategy, just dealing with requirements, and what's the timeline on that?
Well, right now at DHS, similar to DOD, I'm sure it's at other federal agencies as well, we have very rigorous, called Directive 102 process, where we have to go through our alternatives of analysis, our full life cycle cost estimate, the mission needs, the acquisition program baseline. So it's a fairly rigid governance process. And when I say rigid, I mean it has to be very defined with our objectives. So we're in the process of defining kind of what kind of program are we going to sign up for at this point, and what are going to be the successful outcomes. We're looking at, do we have to modernize just our systems, or do we have to modernize more of the DHS ecosystem? So that's, we're trying to right now define kind of what that box looks like.
In this part of the show, we hear from Ann Duncan first, and then we get into questions from the audience.
Before I start on what I wanted to talk about, I actually want to follow up a little more on what Jason and Ray, well, what everybody said about DME and O&M with a little different perspective, and that is, and you sort of hit it, Ray, that, but not specifically, that the CPIC process drives people away from recording DME.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yeah.
So not to say the government's doing enough DME, we aren't, but we're doing more than we tell people. And so that's, sort of what you were getting at, I think, and what we've been getting with our folks is, no, you can't just dump it all in O&M. You actually are doing DME. You need to put a bucket in for DME. So a lot of our projects that were all listed as completely O&M are now starting to show up with some DME. And, project managers don't want to do that because it's hard in CPIC. And so, I'm very excited the CAO Council is looking at the CPIC process and trying to find ways to improve that. And a bunch of people spent some time in December talking about that. And hopefully we can make it a better process so we can truly reflect how the government's spending money. It's still going to leave plenty of room for improvement, but I think it's an opportunity. So I wanted to talk, and I probably won't come up with anything that nobody's heard, but maybe I can come up here with some things that at least some of you don't know. We are heavily into an IT transformation in EPA, includes modernizing our legacy systems, but very much focused on bringing in digital services, moving to DevOps, moving towards both using open source and developing in the open, and we've got some very cool things that I've talked about in other places about how we're developing in the open. And we're modernizing our legacy systems sort of in two big chunks. One is our operational systems that keep the plane flying inside the agency. So we're moving a whole bunch of stuff from Lotus Notes to other platforms, and in the process trying to look at those, rationalize them, get away from our 20,000 plus Lotus Notes applications to a more reasonable number of applications. We really don't need 30 fleet management systems for the agency. One would probably do us just fine. So we're doing that. We're running that process. We also have Enterprise for the Environment, which is where we're doing our mission modernization and trying to move a bunch of single purpose legacy systems into a platform that's going to serve their entire regulated community and our co-regulators. But the thing I wanted, and I think most of you have heard that already, so the thing I wanted to talk about, which unless you listen to AM radio, you might not have heard, is that we're reorganizing to support all this. So I just wanted to share that with you very briefly. We've been on this path for a while. As I was talking to someone this morning, it's taking a long time. I'm a little frustrated, but I think we're close to the finish line in reorganizing our organization. OEI, the Office of Environmental Information at EPA, has not been reorganized since it was created in 1999. So you might imagine the organizational structure is slightly obsolete. So we're really trying to realign the office with the technology as it exists today and the technology of the future, where we want to go, and really address the accelerating rate of change in IT. So we had several objectives. We're trying to do a better job of meeting our internal customer requirements and improve their experience using our tools, as well as the experience of our co-regulators and the regulated community. We wanted to be able to do a better job of planning, and that meant right now we have our planning organization and our strategy organization buried in our operations team. We wanted to get that out of there. And we want to make sure we're more able to align our investments with our priorities and eliminate some redundancy. We also have some really out-of-whack staff-manager ratios, you know, anywhere from 4 to 1 to 25 to 1. And so we need to clean that up. So we are moving up our strategic planning functions and architecture. We're also consolidating like programs together. Over time, those have moved into areas where it doesn't make sense. And we're building out a team, an organization that supports our digital services team. So that's a permanent home for digital services in the EPA. And as some of you I've talked to in the past know, you know, we're not just trying to build a silo of digital services in OEI. What we're trying to build is a center of excellence for digital services and then embed people throughout the entire agency with digital services expertise in program teams so that we're not doing these programs for folks. We are giving them the resources and the training to do the programs themselves. So right now we're in the agency review process, so we're hoping that we're going to get this finished soon.
And let me throw two quick follow-ups kind of related, and then we'll get into your questions. So think of your questions. When you talk about the two chunks you're modernizing, the operational systems and then, I guess, the mission systems, when you start looking and getting into those systems, are you finding surprises? I mean, obviously 30 fleet management systems, 20,000 Lotus Notes, those are good numbers and good surprises. But what are you finding then? Do people understand the need from your organization, or are they pushing back? What's the discussions like?
And yes.
We'll kind of come down the path of the same similar questions.
Yeah.
Yes to both. They understand and they push back. Don't move my cheese.
Yeah, they understand the need. I think there's some pushback in some places on the operational stuff. There's less pushback because everyone recognizes that Lotus Notes is not a go-forward platform for us. The pushback is, and it's interesting, we all agree we should have one fleet management system, but it's really hard for us to understand how we can all work together to get there. That's the biggest pushback on that side. On the mission systems, e-enterprise, the pushback is, can you build that fast enough for me? Can you provide all the right share of services I need? Are you really going to serve my constituent as well as I can now when you start bringing all that stuff together?
I can just tell you one of the areas where we push back is, you know, I do believe we're not going to save our way to success. I also believe we're not going to spend our way to success. It has to be a happy medium, which is why I'm very pleased that we're talking about legacy modernization. And we begin to modernize, and there's a cost to do modernization and development, right? So then if everybody says, why can't we do this? H&R Block, they have a sophisticated system to do this. UPS, they can just digitally sign right at my door. Why don't we do this? Well, we can. Right. And when we show them the price tag, why does it cost so high?
Why does it cost so much, fella? Come on.
Why does it cost so much to modernize? So what I tend to do is generally you have to team with the business when you're going to talk about those decisions because you need those elements to be able to come with you along with the argument that says, yes, it's going to cost this, but you're going to save 1,500 staff years, right? You have to make it make sense for them to make that particular investment. And that's one of my goals in my strategic planning sessions that we're going on is bring the business of IT back into IT. My decisions to make purchases have to be based on something. We need to make sure that we understand what that return on investment and not just this cool whiz-bang thing that we got to do. Right? We have to make it real, make it important for the mission of our particular agency. And I've had a lot of success in doing that. So the pushback I have is damn, IT is expensive.
Right? Jim, do you want?
Sure. The challenge I have is really around the appetite for making enhancements to current systems is very, very large. And you know, we realize we don't have the target platform that we'd like. We'd like to move into real DevOps and having this flexible infrastructure. And so how do you maintain the appetite on just adding a button on a system here or a form or a workflow to getting to the modernized platform to give you that agility, that flexibility? So that's one of our biggest challenges, just being able to control that appetite. And so we're looking at ways to keep the lights on while modernizing at the same time. So that's our current challenge, what we're exploring right now.
All right, first question.
Good morning. I'm Harold Bureau with Alliance Solutions. It's obvious that y'all are doing something pretty bold. My question to you is, you're talking to 200-300 industry folks here. After what you're saying, you know, each of us have an idea of why we'd want to approach you. But getting into your offices sometimes are a little tough. How do you suggest we approach you, and what if each of you could give two or three things that you would like to hear from industry?
You know, being on that side of the house, I understand cold calling. Sometimes it's very difficult, especially when, you know, you have somebody who may be new to the government or new to a personal situation. And, you know, I really think it's incumbent upon the vendors or the corporate industry to really use their networks and their relations, because you got to kind of make that cold call to warm call, right? You have to really do your homework and understand what I really need to come in and offer me that particular solution. And that's important for me because, like I said, I'm leaving here and I got to go brief the Seattle Council at 10:30 on a new initiative that I'm working on, right?
Really? What's the new initiative?
What?
New initiative?
In enterprise content management. We're building that out, but I'll tell you about that.
All right, later.
But long story short is, you know, my calendar fills up maybe 4 or 5 meetings, 10 meetings. I think tomorrow I probably have about 6 meetings on the book. So getting some of that time is very difficult. So the homework you can do in advance to really get to understand what it is I'm working on and maybe even reach and talk to some of my folks will help you get in the door to me because, you know, really, I'll be honest, when I take a call, unless I know you, I send my direct reports out, hey, go talk to this vendor and see if this is something that we're interested in. If it's not, it's nothing that we do, they're going to redirect you somewhere else, so that you know, and they're going to come back and say, no, this is not somebody you want to talk to. That's not always, but, you know, in most cases, it is very similar to that. And you got to understand, if I don't reply, I'm not ignoring you.
Well, I'll weigh in. You know, I do perform extensive market research, and I do meet with a lot of you in the vendor community one-on-one in the spirit of market research. I have to be very careful when there's an open acquisition out there. I can't go through the solicitation and do a point-by-point response without having someone from acquisitions there. That's just the reality of the business that we're in. I do try and have an air of transparency in that anything that I'm doing, whether it's modernization or a follow-on, I always put out RFIs with draft PWSs to make sure that the entire vendor community knows kind of what the plan looks like. And I've found that to be fairly effective when really trying to gain insight into what capabilities the vendor community has. The responses, I think, have been fantastic. And I know some of you have responded, and thank you very much for doing that. It's certainly been enlightening. So while it may be difficult to do a one-on-one face-to-face meeting in my office, I certainly try and go through other avenues as well to make sure that I can get all of the great ideas that's out there. I'm actively looking at moving the entire portfolio to the cloud, establishing a DevOps pipeline. We can't begin a modernization effort without having the flexible infrastructure in place. So there should be no surprise there. We've had a draft out there for, you know, 8 months now. So hopefully you've read it. It's on Eagle 2.
And real quick.
Okay. So the honest answer is you really don't want to talk to me. I know you think you do. But I, you know, the chance of me actually engaging in the decision about who gets the work is really low, right? Because I have lots of other people in my organization who do that. And so I'm not saying you shouldn't get in touch. I mean, I'm interested, as Ray has pointed out, my calendar is a nightmare. You know, I would like to have lunch someday, but I can't remember the last time I had lunch. So if you email our office, we'll look at what you have, and there's a very good chance that you'll get sent to someone on my staff to talk to you or to look into whether it's something they're interested in, just because, you know, there's just not that many hours in my day to have those conversations. In terms of initiatives, I mean, I think the big thing that's out there right now is our Agile acquisition vehicle, right? So that's, I believe it's out, or if it's not out, it's close to being out. And, you know, we want lots of people to apply to get on that vehicle. We want big companies, small companies, lots of variety on that vehicle. So really want to encourage people to go for that.
And I guess the logical follow-up is through FedBizOps you're going to put that out, or is it coming through an Alliant type of, do you know?
It's coming out of GSA.
In an environment where you've got a big portfolio and you can only modernize a subset at a time, how are you approaching implementing common capabilities to drive code efficiency across a future state?
That's a good question. I think that the nirvana of having a common architecture across everything is not really my ambition. We have a mixture of COTS, software as a service solutions, as well as custom development type of work. So I am trying to standardize around open source for some of the custom development work that we do, putting that through a pretty regular roadmap that I think everyone could understand. But I don't want to get too prescriptive to the vendor community and saying this is exactly how I want to build this, because I really am looking for innovation in that space. And I can't possibly have thought of everything, every permeation of what makes sense to meet my business needs.
So for us on the mission side, you know, it's important, right? We have the vast majority of our mission systems are regulatory systems. They collect regulatory data from people, or they collect voluntary data from people. So we actually want to move those into a single platform with shared services and, you know, a very definitive, clear architecture that we're driving people to. And that we're enforcing in a variety of ways, including through some of the new authorities we have from FITARA, but also because we are providing most of those shared services and we're providing the platform. And so we're providing this place where it actually becomes, instead of building this big monolithic system, you come here, you add a few fields to the database, you use our rules engine and our shared services, and it's a much simpler process. So, you know, that is an opportunity for the rest of the agency to save a lot of time and money in building on this platform. From the operational systems, you know, we have a hierarchy, right? We start with, is there a shared governance service? Is there a commercial off-the-shelf product that you can buy? Can you build on one of our primary shared platforms, SharePoint or Salesforce, right? Only then do we start talking about, you know, what are the tools that you might build in to build a custom application. And we hope that 90% of the stuff falls out before we ever get to building a custom application.
And you also mentioned open source. Mm-hmm. Jim mentioned open source. Where does that play into the discussion as you look at whether custom or non-custom and the like?
Right. I mean, so there's two places for us open source falls in. One is all those mission systems we're really driving towards using open source tools. But the other is when we look at building, if we do decide to build something custom, we are going to default to open source first. And a lot of our standards are changing from proprietary systems to open source.
Right.
So I can tell you some multiple different areas of how we do that. I am focused on enterprise architecture to help me with that. We're looking for those opportunities where we can consolidate those particular functions into spread across our enterprise rather than silos. I'm at the bureau level, right? So I know it's very hard for the department level to really do that. So also working with the other CIOs across looking at what they're doing and things of that particular nature. Like I said, one of the things I'm going to be doing is talking about initiatives, about what we've done, sharing it with 18 other CIOs and say, hey, look, this is something that's not unique to NRCS. This is something that I'm sure you all are experiencing this as well. I've already built this out in the platform, has an ATO. Do you all want to leverage this? Right? So we're looking at it from that perspective too. But we're also looking at it from a cost perspective too. We're looking at how much are we really spending on these particular systems, and looking at, you know, those systems where I'm spending on them at maybe $1.5, $2 million a year. And saying, ouch, right? Is this a financial system? Is this a time and attendance system? Is this an audit tracking system? And all these things couldn't be unique just to NRCS. Somebody else has to have one. I have lunch often with all of the CIOs within USDA, and we're talking about normalizing on maybe a modern BTC system or modernizing on another potential system that we particularly have, and going at it together rather than apart, right? And bringing everybody else in. And everybody's kind of doing their own thing within USDA and leading those particular efforts. So it's not just me, please. We got a lot of sophisticated CIOs in USDA that I respect very much. But those are just three different ways of how we're trying to do that. EA, building relationships with our other CIO offices, and then looking at cost and technology. And the last thing I have to say is security, right? If I have something with 300 POAMs, that's first on my list, right? Especially if they're high, especially if they're very sophisticated, depending on complexity of those things. All of those things factored in together is kind of how we're doing ours. Hopefully that helps answer your question.
My question is for Jim from DHS. Jim, what role do you think FITARA and the now with the focus on the CIO having hopefully more control over the funding issues, what role do you think that will play in helping to move more monies from O&M to DME?
From a DHS perspective, we've actually been implementing a lot of FITARA-like processes for a while. So every acquisition that we put out there actually has to have CIO review and approval. As far as the, and I know the DHS CIO has established a whole FITARA office, so we're looking for future guidance on that and how that will impact us. But from everything that we've seen, it's really just a modification of the processes we've already been following. And it has been helpful because we will often put out a solicitation that we are missing standards, especially on 508 or security, that you definitely want to catch it at a department level. As far as how it affects the DME versus O&M, much of our funding for our systems actually comes from the business. So the operational component of ICE actually funds a lot of what we do. I don't know if ATAR is going to solve that anytime soon. DME is traditionally given to us through special appropriations, which is more of the OCIO money, but it really comes at the component level where the DHS CIO just approves what our plan is. We also have, for any of our large modernization programs, we have the Program Accountability and Risk Management Office, which is really the governing side of our Directive 102. So for our modernization programs to even get through, to even start, we need to, for large dollar figures, over $300 million total life cycle, we need to have the Undersecretary for Management actually sign off on that program. So we get a fair amount of reviews at DHS already, so I don't think FATAR is going to change our world too much.
Let's open it up to the rest of the panel on FATAR, since it's a hot topic. And you're the headquarters CIO, and while Ray is the bureau-level CIO, you see the effect differently. So, Anne, start off.
From my standpoint, what I get is a much broader view of what's going on in the agency. Historically, we only had one CIO. We had people who had complete control of their IT portfolios, and we made a lot of sub-optimized decisions about what systems to build, right? So water might have a system that would meet AIR's needs if they just added a couple of fields to their database, and AIR will build a whole new system, right? So while that doesn't immediately reduce O&M, it actually reduces DME immediately. Over time, you're making better DME investments. You're reducing O&M eventually by not building those systems and therefore not having to maintain them. So over time, it's going to drive more investment into those core systems. You know, we were on a path with the enterprise already that would have allowed us to start centralizing and modernizing, but adding FATAR capabilities on top of that is just a tremendous ability to really drive our work into the right systems in a way that we couldn't control before. But I think, you know, to your point to some extent, we will see a decline in DME in some cases first because things won't get built that might have, and then a decline in DNA in O&M as we retire systems.
And FATAR plans were due last year. You got them back. Anything you can tell us about your plan?
I still think we don't have that final approval. I was told a few days ago by someone on my team that it was imminent.
That it was
approved, but that soon. We haven't gotten the letter. Yeah, soon.
Soon.
So, you know, as soon as it's fully approved, we're going to post it. But, you know, our plan, I think, reflects a lot of the things I've been talking about. I think one thing that we've been doing that I haven't talked about much is we're going out and doing portfolio reviews. So for each organization in the agency, we're sitting down and spending 2 to 4 hours reviewing all of their IT work, right? And we have, they're kind of two flavors because we talk to the regions and it's very operational. It's, you know, you're running networks, you're running operational programs, you're supporting basically infrastructure in the regions. And then we talk to the program offices and it's very much about mission systems and what mission systems they're building, what they're maintaining, what they're retiring, what their plans are going forward. And so, you know, the goal of these reviews is in part to give me that broad picture of the whole agency so that as we go in the next budget cycle, we can make good choices. But we've also had the opportunity to really drill into accountability in those organizations as well.
I'm Steve Charles from MIMIX, and I am fascinated by the intersection with FATARA and this direct link between the CIO, apparently back to the director of OMB, and the statement earlier about the difficulty of the CPIC process and lots of people wanting to try to do good in that area. I happen to have a meeting later today with some folks on the Hill, and I'm wondering what might we talk about from a fiscal law perspective that could ease this transition from, you know, this DME, O&M, as a service world. It's all about the money and the constraints under fiscal law. And with FATAR, we now have a more direct linkage. Could we talk a little more about this CPIC process?
Well, I am not an expert on CPIC. Even though I brought it up, that's probably a dangerous move, bring up something I know a little bit about. You know, what I'll tell you is that the way CPIC is designed right now is it reinforces waterfall. Like many of the systems we live in the government, it slows us down a lot because it's designed, you know, around this multi-year budget, right? I'm supposed to decide like 3 years ahead what I'm going to build, you know, I mean, and how much it's going to cost and when I'm going to be done. So I think that that's a big part of what is going on with the CIO Council and the CIOs and the staff who went to this meeting in December is how do we redesign CPIC to live in the federal budget process, right, and be more agile, right? How do we make it so that we're not driving people into a waterfall process, either because of the reporting or the planning aspects of CPIC? In terms of, you know, a fiscal, and again, my understanding of government budgeting is greater than it was when I arrived, but probably pretty superficial still. The way that we budget, and we were talking about this before we started, right, we have two-year money, but in agencies, we don't really treat it like two-year money. We really treat it like one-year money. And we don't get that, by the way, until, well, this year, you know, end of January. And then we start sweeping people's money in July to make sure we don't lose it, right? So, oh, you didn't spend it yet. Let's move it over here. And we have a procurement process that makes it really hard to put money on projects. So what I'm getting at is if I got money that was good for 5 years, right, that I could plan on, here's your budget for the next 5 years for IT modernization projects. And by the way, you've got it now, and you can plan out over 5 years how to spend it, and you're not going to have to try and guess next year what it is or wait until January to get it and then try and spend it all before July. From that is a big change that would help plan IT. You know, and there are places in the government where we do that, right? There are some defense programs where we put big chunks of money available in the future, and certainly that would be helpful for IT.
What's the message you want to leave the audience with when it comes to legacy systems modernization?
You know, I think from our standpoint, the message is that we're trying to move fast and apply agile principles, and we're trying to focus on moving our stuff to core platforms, whether they're internally built platforms or COTS platforms, and that we're focusing on not building the next legacy system, but using modular principles and practices that'll give us a sustainable future.
All right, Jim.
We're looking at primarily creating that flexible infrastructure. Again, going to establishing the cloud DevOps environment, obviously layering Agile on top of the Agile methodologies. But we're also not naive that there's possibly commercial offerings, software as a service, of course, a big proponent of that, looking down those avenues. So yeah, we're looking at it from two different perspectives, both the commercial offerings and then also for the customer development, more of the DevOps, Agile type of methodology.
All right, Ray, you get the last word.
We're looking at cloud first and COTS first ways to do business. We're finding an enormous savings in going to SaaS platforms, as you mentioned. One of the things that I would leave you with, though, for those of us in IT communities or maybe those of you who are serving in IT community, but maybe from a corporate serving a particular government agency, is to remember we have to really figure out if you're going to change on them, you got to figure out what's in there. Right? That analysis has to be done. I'm telling you, I found an enormous amount of DME that's being done in O&M simply because it was easier to get things funded. We didn't have to go through the IRB. And now we're forcing those disciplines and those categories of O&M that we've defined and forcing them to take that DME out. And what we're seeing is our O&M is shrinking. So we're getting a real perspective of what we're actually spending on O&M. It's not happening overnight, but that's something the gentleman asked, what can you bring to us to help us out? And if you're talking about legacy modernization, start by offering to do analysis of what you're actually doing in O&M. I don't know about any of you. It took me to last year to figure out what the hell I had in O&M. And I know I'm not the only one out there with 100 systems and productions, right? So maybe that's a good place to start.
That's all the time we have for today. In this show, we were talking about legacy systems modernization. I moderated a panel earlier this month at an FCA Bethesda breakfast. My guests on the panel were Ray Coleman, the CIO at the Agriculture Department's Natural Resources Conservation Service, James Porter, an IT portfolio manager in the office of the CIO in the Immigrations and Customs Enforcement Director at the Homeland Security Department, and Ann Duncan, the CIO at the Environmental Protection Agency. I'm Jason Miller, and you've been listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.